Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the TeachNet podcast. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Colin de la Higuera, who is working in the University of Nantes. I've had the pleasure of knowing Colin over a number of years now. We first met in Slovenia, where we ended up planning a new project at the time called AI for Tea. So, Colin, great to have you, and you're very welcome to the TeachNet podcast.
Hello, Michael. Very, very glad to be here.
And I know, Colin, you have been in Ireland recently. You presented at a conference down in Cork, and we are delighted that we have the opportunity today to learn a little bit more about you. But Colin, tell us a little bit about yourself. How are you involved in this area of AI? Your work at Nantes, I know you've worked with the UNESCO, and you've also done some work with the French ministry.
Right. I am a professor at Nantes University. I teach computer science, and more precisely, inside AI, what is called machine learning. So this is a very technical topic, but it's also the key to how modern AI works. A machine learns, and then from that learning, builds models, builds predictions, builds whatever we get when we're actually using it. So after a sort of career doing research, I started understanding that this research actually did have an impact. And I'm not the only person like that. In our field, a number of people said, one second, what we're doing has got an impact. So we started thinking, how can it have a positive impact? How can it be good for people rather than just good for, let's say, companies? And this is where we built things to sort of enable a sharing of knowledge, making sure that knowledge was something that was a common good. So that was my activity in something called open education, which is part of what I do. And of course, the role of AI in this case became positive, or could become positive, as a tool to help share knowledge. And then at some point, the question also worked the other way around, meaning AI is now there. Can knowledge about AI be shared in an open way? Right? So you take the same two actors, open knowledge and AI, and in one case you open knowledge work for AI, in the other case it's AI work for open knowledge. And so this is something that I'm doing both at Nantes University, and of course became something interesting for UNESCO, who has been supporting through our UNESCO chair this type of activities, this type of thinking, this type of questions for now, I'd say about 8 years.
Okay, so the rest of us really have only switched on to AI in education since November 2022, but you've been at this for a long time. And I suppose it's very interesting that you say that you have a research background and you're now bringing that to try and help people, including teachers and school leaders, in relation to this thing called AI. And I suppose more and more generative AI, which is where a lot of the hype is at the moment. Where do you see AI at a kind of a very high level in education today? Where do you see it going? And do you think it's a good thing, or what should we be doing? I know it's a big question.
I think AI is an uninvited guest to the banquet of education. So as such, we're not sure if we're happy to have that guest. The guest is clearly entertaining everybody. And it's becoming, you know, a little bit like the star of the party. And again, we're not sure if that's a good thing, if the party should actually change what it was doing to accommodate for this guest, or if we should say, okay, look, we're happy that you're here, but please, you know, just shut up a bit so that we can make the, you know, keep on with what we were doing. So I think we're in that situation. Yes, AI was there already before, and even before the arrival of ChatGPT and the generative AIs, we had noticed that there were issues. Typically, language teachers had to face the fact that kids were using automatic translation tools that were at some point laughable, didn't really work, and then at some point started working at least sufficiently well to convince the pupils that they should be using it. And basically, they are the ones who invited AI to the party. Okay, and so then we had to do something about it. So you were already working with us in this project AI for T when generative AI arrived. And came as a surprise, even for specialists like us. We had seen some of the technologies already there, but it still came as a surprise and came as even more of a surprise, the huge impact it was having. So if people like us could consider it was perhaps even a good news because, okay, we went the guests, but we were some of the few people who actually knew what the guests were talking about, this unexpected guest. So we were able to play a role, to publish the different resources, to help teachers learn what to do with this. And this is, I think, where we are still now. We're still trying to, still trying to help the teachers understand what's happening, what their positions can be, what's good, what's less good, and so onwards. That's what the position is in this moment. It is probably about to shift. The situation, that's where the position is about to shift. We have this impression that there is a push to say, okay, we're all accepting this guest. Now do something about it. So this shift is not going to be simple. And this is where I think you, I, and a number of partners are trying to work on how can we go in this direction.
And in your work, how do you see, I presume, generative AI in particular is having a major impact for the students in how they produce content, how they learn? I mean, I've heard phrases like a teacher in the pocket. Have you seen good examples? I know that you talk to the students quite regularly. What are they doing with these tools? And where do you see the positive opportunities here? And maybe some of the things that are not so welcome, as you said. I like your analogy of the guest to the party, because it is here.
Yeah, so talking to students is essential here because this is not top-down what is happening. It's very much bottom-up. It's very much the students are finding ways that we had not suspected of using AI to help them learn. Let's put it this way. Sometimes it's to help them learn, and sometimes it's to learn instead of them. This is when things go wrong, right? When a student says, okay, because industry is convincing me that it's all about saving time, I have found a fantastic way to save time during my studies, which is not study at all. So this is where things go wrong. And this is because actually the whole idea of let's save time, right, being something absolutely fantastic, right, is something we should try and debunk and say, no, you know, life isn't about saving time. Don't want to reach, you know, death as soon as possible. So it's not about saving time. Life is about sort of taking time to do the things you enjoy, to build yourself. And this may involve actually doing it the long way rather than the short way. But these conversations are the ones we should probably be having now. So on the other hand, I've seen some good examples. I've seen students waste time with AI, which means explore possibles, explore alternatives. Ask questions, go and check the literature, find stuff, then exercise critical thinking to think, well, one second, this doesn't sound right, this thing that the AI has generated. So now I have to go and explore, probably in a more classical way, by checking Wikipedia or checking books. So there are a number of very positive, very interesting attitudes. I still haven't written on this because I think that it's still confusing in my head. I think our relationship with time is essential here. And when it's ours, I'm talking ours. In this case, I'm thinking of the students. And this idea that doing everything as quickly as possible is a good thing, somehow it doesn't work. This is what is perhaps causing problems.
And just to probe that for a moment, I mean, we have lots of suitcase terms in anything to do with education and more particularly with the world of computer science. And I believe it was Marvin Minsky actually came up with that term, suitcase terms. But I'm thinking here of things like we say that we would like our students to be engaged in deep learning. I'm hearing from you that on occasion they're not involved in learning at all, or at best it's superficial or fast learning. And as you say, maybe that's not always the best kind of learning that they should be engaged in.
Yeah, we're not sure here, right? There's still not enough research, not enough evidence to know on the long term, you know, what is a good learning and what is less good learning. For example, there's one wrong idea, which is saying, you know, learning has to be painful. You don't suffer, you don't learn. I mean, this is stupid. This is a sort of some teachers think, you know, give this guy a lot of hard homework so that that's the only way to understand by doing hours and hours of homework. The elite system in France, building of the elites, is actually built on that, right? It is through getting some of the more gifted kids in an environment where they just work 80 hours a week to prepare the examination to get into the system. So there's still a strong belief that you have to suffer to learn. So one thing is to think that that's not necessarily a very good idea. But on the other hand, the converse can't be a very good idea either. The idea of saying, okay, let's not suffer at all, and let's just sort of go straight to the result and find this. Give an example, very simple one, that yesterday I was speaking with some students who are learning computing. And I was asking them, you know, how are you using these AIs? Saying, okay, we're using them to find ideas. So when we're given a problem in algorithmics, we'll ask the AI, and the AI will give us, you know, the route to follow. And I felt so sad for them, because somehow that was the exciting bit, right? The moment you say, aha, I found the idea, you know, the one that goes click, then what's left is the syntax. It's the, you know, getting the code right and the bits. But the ideas part is somehow stolen by the AI. It doesn't sound right.
Yeah. Very interesting. And you've touched there a few times on the whole notion of research. And I note that from my work with the European Commission, and particularly with the Delta Working Group, the work of the French Ministry in this area and their most recent publication, which I've opened on the screen beside me, of January 2025, Artificial Intelligence and Education, Research Contributions and Challenges for Public Policies. They seem to be taking a research-informed approach in the ministry in France.
Yeah, I agree. So we're lucky in France, but from having met a number of ministries of education, I would suggest that there's often this sort of research-oriented approach. There's a lot of exchanges between the ministries, and let's put it this way, they are very well read, right? They're all reading everything that is coming out and the different publications. They try and make sure that they're working with researchers. I think that's great. So yes, the example you're giving is this latest publication, but there's been a number of publications by the French Ministry. In fact, there's more publications by the French Ministry, perhaps, you know, on this is the situation, than you may find by researchers, because you have to be able to not just examine the literature, but also say, you know, this is what is happening.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I'm constantly, to anyone who listen, pointing out that the activity in the French ministry is worth following. And I actually shared that document that I've referenced, and hopefully the web link is there now for it. It wasn't earlier in the year, with a colleague in Slovenia yesterday, and they found it really useful. But that brings me to the next topic, Colin. As we mentioned, we had the pleasure of working with each other on the AI for Tea. We're now looking at a new project called AIDL, and we are working with, again, some old friends in the French ministry, in the Italian ministry, in the ministry in Luxembourg, and in Slovenia. And we've now added two new countries. We've added Lithuania, and we have added Spain. So it's an exciting project. Do you want to tell me a little bit about it, just from your perspective of what you think it's hopefully going to help us with, and some of the big ideas that we're starting to just unpack at this moment in the project?
So I think it's, again, a good project, or a good starting point, is that it's taking a mixed approach. It's not actually saying that AI is just brilliant, so let's do it and do it fast. It's both seeing AI as something that is raising questions, but also something that is bringing us some opportunities. So hopefully we keep this balanced approach. So we're talking here about the links between, yes, what we're calling a triangle with generative AI and its impact in schools. A key question for the Commission and for Council of Europe and other actors, which is the links with democracy and how something called digital citizenship should exist. And then the third actor that's introduced here is something called data literacy. So if we look at the two first, the links there are clear. We're all seeing the arrival of some darker times, let's put it this way. We see that democracy is endangered. Obviously, the only it's not just AI that is endangering democracy, but in AI can play a role. So why is that? It's because in democracy, we need citizens to be able to argue. We need citizens to be able to have an opinion. And when you start not being able to distinguish truth from fake, you have difficulties in expressing opinions. This is very important in the case of democracy, right? Democracy thrives because we are, as citizens, as adults, but then also, you know, from a young age, we're able to refute, we're able to disagree, we're able to have conversations, to have debates. So that's why AI is, I'm not sure it's a threat, but at least it's, you know, it's again this uninvited guest, and the conversations have stopped or don't really know how to go on. So that's why it's important. And so we're introducing this project, a third element, which is this data literacy. And hopefully this third element is the one that might sort of contribute to get the balance right. So data, we know, is crucial to AI. AI is, in a way, data transformed into algorithms, right? Sort of the process is data has been munched. Huge quantities of data have been munched. The more data munched, the better the systems, seems to be the law around here. So understanding what is this data that has been munched, how it is munched, how relevant are all the questions we may have about data, whose is this data, does this data appear to be biased? There's a number of questions there. So all these questions have to be addressed, and we need to address them in schools. So teachers first, and then pupils. So this is what it's about.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think going back to your notion of this triangle and these three concepts, the generative AI, the digital citizenship, and the whole area of data literacy. And I know we're only starting down the journey in AIDL. Mm-hmm. And before I go any further, I should also say that the Irish Department of Education are involved, and they were involved in AI4D. That's how I was involved. And our next meeting is actually going to be in Dublin, where everybody is going to congregate, and we're going to unpack some of these key ideas. I mean, you've spent, I think it's fair to say, most of your life dealing with these issues, particularly with data anyway. Data literacy, just for the last few minutes, and I think we'll be coming back to this to hear how these things are unpacking. What is data literacy to you, and how can we, in schools where sometimes we will have teachers who may not even use technology very often, they may prefer to use older technologies like books and pens and paper, and now they're hearing about this uninvited guest, which the students have in their pockets, they have it when they go home. So how can we, what are your thoughts initially on how we can go about developing the data literacy of the teachers and of the students in their classes, because we are going to be focused in this project in upper secondary, which is post 16. What do you think?
So the question of data literacy, it is a complicated one. So we don't have a clear answer. We've actually got a sort of a whole set of possible answers. One of the answers is saying, let's just talk about it. Just basically, it's a phenomenon out there. Data is important. So we perhaps can talk about data without even looking at data, right? Just talk about it and say, oh, you know, there are issues, data can be biased, and who does it belong to? And take it from perhaps a social science point of view, perhaps think about the ethical questions. There's a number of huge questions there. Then at the other end of the spectrum, you can think about it from the computing point of view, saying, okay, data is something that is zeros and ones, and that you can work with using computer programs and databases and stuff like that. So, which, as you're saying, this is not simple for most teachers because they don't have training for this. They don't code. Code isn't something that is natural where everybody goes and codes in the morning. My feeling is that we either need both approaches or we need something in the middle, right? Having just one of these approaches is wrong. If you only talk about the technical parts and you don't understand the consequences, the economical consequences, the ethical consequences, the consequences in society of data, then you've missed the point. But on the other hand, if you're just talking about it in general as if it was black magic, then there's also something wrong there. So the challenge for us, and this is a really great, interesting challenge, is can we reach a middle point? Can we sort of use more modern tools which are starting to exist? Can we use generative AI itself to help us or help teachers and then help pupils play with data? Play with data means enjoy it somehow, get the feeling of what's happening, be able to take some data themselves, go and find things out, looking at the data set, saying, okay, perhaps, you know, what can I say about this data set? Can I look at it? How do I look at data? Are there tools there? Can I have my own tools, or do I have to only look at it the way the person who has built the data set wants me to look at it, which again is a problem for democracy. Okay, so there's a challenge there to try and find a new way to actually talk about these things, which contains a sort of a dosis of computing and a dosis of social sciences.
Yeah, really interesting. And I'm just reminded, you said the word fun earlier, and you talked about learning being hard. And I'm reminded of somebody who I would have followed quite closely, was the late Seymour Papert. And Seymour, God be good to him, he had a phrase called hard fun. I think it was he that had that. And what I'm hearing you describe is that middle ground, which we're going to explore and we'll definitely be coming back to hear more about, sounds to me a bit like a sandbox, somewhere that we can put in hands-on activities, not something theoretical that, you know, I'm having a great chat with myself or with ChatGPT, but that I'm actually playing with data, that I'm doing things, making mistakes maybe, but I'm learning, and all of the time develop that conceptual idea that people then can go and engage in informed or critical discussions.
Yeah, I think I'll buy that. I think that's close enough to what I've got in mind also. So yeah, sandbox means, good news is that nowadays, you know, if you take a data set and you start playing with it and changing things, and then you don't like what you've done, you can just throw it away. There's no real cost there. You can then take another copy and try something else.
And I think this approach, and I know from our AI for Tea experiences, which we did a lot of really good work, but we learned a lot of things that we would never do the same again, which I think it's called learning, Michael. And I think, as you said, the tool sets, again, I'm just reminded, and we'll finish maybe on this idea, like the tool sets have evolved so much since November of 2022 and early 23, when we were really getting excited about the implications of ChatGPT for schools. Because prior to that, we were talking about AI, but our teachers really didn't. This was not something that was on their minds. Now I think this is really on their minds. And you alluded to it earlier, the wider world, the political world, the news world, is something that is very real. We can see that there is a lot of information out there. And you talked about knowledge at the very beginning, and this notion of what is information versus knowledge, to me, seems to be something that we'll also need to unpack, Colin.
The fact is that the relationship between what's happening in school and what is happening outside school, so that is society, it is the politicians, it is the society, the challenges, it's more and more there, right? So we should do it, but we shouldn't just do it just by debating. I mean, again, we do have all sorts of tools here that we can actually use, and we want the pupils, the kids, to themselves start using AI in such a way as they can use it as a positive tool to interact with the world.
Again, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking of older educators. I'm thinking of people like Maria Montessori, where she used blocks and, you know, physical artifacts for children to learn. I'm thinking of Seymour, again, with Logo and Lego Mindstorms and all of these kind of things, where we actually give people tools where they can learn, where they enjoy it. It's hard fun.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, that they are more confident and competent in this whole area. I think that's what we're hopefully going to achieve. I'm going to give you the last word.
No, hopefully. Hopefully that's what we want to achieve. I mean, there's a huge amount of challenges. Understanding what we're doing, and I think you mentioned it also, we need to onboard teachers. And it's not going to be easy, because teachers come from one side of the spectrum or the other. And nevertheless, here, The mistake would be to say, okay, let's split this AI into sort of four different teachers, each one with his expert zone. So somehow this is a completely new problem, to saying, how do we get hold of teachers? Or how do we train teachers? Or how do we find teachers who are going to accept to cover such a wide range of ideas, many of them new, many of them not formally written? It's lovely. I think it's a lovely challenge for a teacher, but it is a challenge.
It is a challenge. But I think what I'm also reading and listening to is that, you know, you're a computer scientist. You know, in your tribe, this is something that data, it's what you live on. Okay. For others, you know, myself, I'd be probably more in the humanities. You know, it can feel like we sometimes can say, oh, you know what? Talk to Colin on that one. But actually, in this case, more and more I'm hearing that the history teacher needs to take this on board, French teacher, the geography teacher, the mathematics teacher, the language teachers you mentioned particularly. So this is everybody's problem. We all need to talk about this in our own discipline.
Totally agreed. And there's probably not the same answers in each discipline, but it still means that these conversations are going to have to take place.
I think that's a great place to stop. Colin, thank you so much for giving of your time this morning. To be continued.
To be continued. Thank you.